Evening, buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana.
Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI. Woo!
Welcome into episode 534 of the Skate Podcast. I am Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. Today's episode is going to be a mailbag, so thank you all for submitting your questions. Just skimming them quickly before the show, there's a great variety, so I really do appreciate, we all appreciate you guys taking the time to send your questions. And yeah, so Bridget Scott, we have the Olympics for the men's tournament that got underway yesterday, which was Sweden versus Italy. And the first upset in game one, which was Slovakia versus Finland. I think the shots were nearly 60 to 20, but you know what? In a short tournament, anything can really happen. I mean, I wouldn't predict Italy beating Canada or anything like that, but short of that, anything really can happen.
No, but France is going for gold, but that's what I know. But
that is true.
I think France is playing as we're recording, right?
Yes.
I think they're down 2-0. So
yeah, I have it on in the background just to make sure I'm right.
Yeah, I mean that powerhouse offense is gonna get going any minute here.
Yeah,
for France.
down against the Swiss 2-0. The Swiss took a 2-0 lead, by the way, 5 minutes into the game. So France has been hanging in there. And you know who else hung in there in their game, as I just mentioned earlier, was Italy and Sweden. I mean, that is a game that you try to forecast a game before it happens. You're like, yeah, that's an 8-0 win, right? Should be, right? But again, these international stages don't tell these players who are on the Olympic stage that they're gonna roll over just because they're playing Sweden. Like it's what makes these tournaments really unique. And you know, their goalie was unbelievable. He got hurt. One of the best saves I've seen like all year in any league on robbing Elias Pettersson, who had a fantastic move on a breakaway. I think he just something must have stretched too far or something, but it was a hell of a save. I don't know. It's in the Slovakian win over Finland. It's why international hockey is so fun.
And like Slovakia's goalie was awesome in that game. And again, these are just like, you know, not no name goalies. Like both goalies for Slovakia and Italy have some international pedigree and, you know, have played at like decent levels, but NHL wise, like not NHLers, not names that any, you know, NHL fan would know. And day one of the tournament, they're both out there standing on their heads, and in Slovakia's case to get a win, and in Italy's case to keep them hanging around way, way longer than anyone would have expected.
Yeah. You want to know what was striking too? Was like, so obviously Sweden is a bunch of NHL guys for the most part and Italy isn't, but the size difference was extremely noticeable. And I also felt like Victor Hedman looked like the biggest hockey player I've ever seen because the rink is smaller. I don't know if you guys noticed this too. Every person looks like slightly bigger, like it's an optical illusion because we're imagining it on a regular size rink, but it's not the same dimensions. So it just feels like he takes up so much of the zone. And it's just like, it just was crazy to see and I know it's not like a huge difference in size, but don't you feel like it's been noticeable to see? Like, it just feels like there's no space. Like, first of all, the neutral zone is smaller, so transition happens like right away. And second of all, like, it just, I think the boards are more like everything's more narrow as well, slightly.
It's like, there's like no corners. It's like,
no, there's not. It's just like
a corner and can like just immediately be out front.
It's like a bloodbath. Like, you're always gonna have to be playing in the corners because it just feels like it's just like, I don't know. It was a weird thing for my brain to get used to, because except for, you know, it reminded me a little bit of Lawler, Brian.
Yeah.
If you've been to, I know Brian went to Merrimack, and Lawler Arena's at Merrimack, and its dimensions are a little wonky as well. So
look, that this is why France is going to win gold, right? Because who is one of France's best players? It's Stefan DaCosta, who played at Merrimack.
Yeah, he's had practice.
Bridget was 9 steps ahead on this.
I mean,
that's so far ahead. You should have seen the board of like all the dots and connecting.
It was so hard to not watch
Charlie this game. And Always Sunny, Pepe Silvia. Yeah.
it's so difficult to record while that game's happening, because not only did Bridget select France to win the gold, I have to see if her prediction comes true. But yeah, old alum Stefan DaCosta, who for those who may not know, I want to say. Bridget, this may have just been a little bit before your time following college in depth, so maybe you do know this, but Scott, was that like the 2010 season where he kind of breakout season where Merrimack went to the Hockey's Finals against BC?
Yeah, it was right around, I think that was like the 10-11 season, and they made NCAAs that year. I remember they're up in Manchester, they played Notre Dame. But yeah, I remember like he really just came storming on the scene. Like I think it was probably 19 or 20 year old freshman. And I believe his very first game against, it might've been against Army. He had like 6 points, like just like a massive, and like Merrimack was clearly better than Army, it turned out, but he just had like a massive first game and then put together a really strong freshman season that year. And, you know, I remember thinking he was like probably the best player Merrimack had in a long time. If not ever, just in terms of sheer talent, because he did end up playing some NHL games. He played some NHL games for Ottawa, and obviously now has made a career more in the minors and over in Europe. But I mean, he was really good at Merrimack.
I think unfortunately his biggest NHL highlight was getting open ice crunched by Dion Phaneuf. So that probably didn't feel good. But yeah, it's he was a good player. Well, speaking of Merrimack, just off topic a little bit, or a lot of it, but one of the biggest shames in that area was Fuddruckers going away for a friendly toast. What an absolute travesty that was. Just Bridget, you have no idea the amount
I thought
of times
we were going this direction. That's the travesty. No. But
this is not a fashion segment. This is a food segment. I mean, just as a kid growing up, like a lot of times you thought you would play at Merrimack at Lawler or whatever, Hockey Night in Boston with myself and my brothers. And it's like, you would just go over to Fuddruckers afterwards and just, you know, you got the burgers. I don't want to get hungry. I know it's 8 in the morning, but that friendly toast, hot take, friendly toast sucks. I hate the friendly toast. It's popping up everywhere. It's no good.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's okay.
Well, now that you've lost us our friendly toast sponsorship.
Yeah. That's okay. We, you know.
Was it Harrison's Roast Beef in North Andover too?
Oh,
and now
Harrison's.
Now they're gone.
I heard they came back though. So if we have any Andover area residents, you can confirm that for us. But Harrison's was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh, just the crinkle fries, the pizza rolls,
you
the
guys,
roast beef sandwiches.
We're not gonna be able to eat for at least an hour. So please.
All right, let's get this back on the tracks here. So one thing before the mailbag is I wanted to comment on is you talked about the size of the rink, Bridget, and it's mainly the neutral zone is where that the rink got condensed. They tried to keep the offensive zones, you know, the same. Who do you guys think this favors? Like, do you think that, okay, take Team Canada, for example, all of the speed that they possess with their forward group, McDavid, McKinnon, Celebrini, et cetera. Do you think that the smaller ice helps them because it's just that much tougher for defensemen, opposing defensemen to figure out their gap control and handle that quick transition? Or do you think a speedster team would rather have like the traditional larger Olympic ice surface that you've seen sometimes over in Europe, not so much in North America, obviously? Well, Salt Lake City was Olympic size, but anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Like my gut reaction is ultimately it's probably not a big enough deal to make a huge difference one way or the other for anyone. Like, you know, all these guys play in NHL ice all the time, and it's ultimately only a little bit smaller than NHL ice. It is noticeable, and like I'm sure those guys are going to notice it playing, But I don't know that's going to like swing anything in terms of favoring one team more than another. You know, the larger Olympic ice, it's always interesting because like it is sort of the natural reaction of like, well, that clearly favors faster teams, but offense would always be down on Olympic ice. Like usually it led to lower scoring games. So it didn't really, yes, there was more space, but it didn't really lead to more offense. I guess, you know, we'll obviously know better at the end of the tournament if like, hey, one team figured out a way to take advantage of this, but going in, I don't think it's going to be super meaningful either way for anyone.
Yeah. It's only, the difference is only if you spread it out, like the width is, or the length is about 4 feet shorter, right? Which is mostly,
yeah, that was about, yeah, three or something.
Three is what they said. Yeah. But that's all, like that's overall, like, so it's, that's mainly, so it's not 3 feet in both directions. It's 3 feet entirely. That's pretty much taken away from the neutral zone. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully it doesn't mess up things too much. I mean, if you're the faster team, you're always going to have an advantage in the neutral zone and transition. So
can I also just say, watching these first few games, and correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, thinking back to Torino in 06 and Sochi in 14, I'm just trying to think of some of the last international best on best Olympics that weren't in North America. Those crowds I felt like were kind of, you know, blah, but well, again, maybe Torino wasn't, but the crowd so far in Milano has been awesome. For, like, you know, it kind of has that European soccer vibe, like, you know, the Slovakian fans yesterday against Finland were very energetic with their singing and their chanting. I just think it's really cool. You know, the way that this tournament has shaped out. I feel like sometimes hockey in Europe, not for the local leagues, but like international hockey, sometimes I feel like at the Olympic stage, it's a little bit subdued, but like the crowd's been great so far.
The even the, we were covering the Spangler Cup not that long ago, where the college U.S. college kids went over to play, and one of the assistant coaches was Mike Souza, who's a coach at UNH, I should say. And he played actually in Cortina, like once part of his pro career, he played in Europe and he played in Italy for a while. And he said, everybody sleeps on how big of like hockey fans there is over there. He said, you'd be surprised. It's like it draws well. So maybe people noticeable. Are realizing that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like the environment it's come across on TV, which I think, you know, you see that rank and it's like, first off, like, is it even going to be done? And then secondly, like, kind of looks weird. It's like the, you know, it's almost like a horseshoe where the main part of the stands kind of cuts off in one of the D zones. And then it almost looks like a makeshift section behind the goal. And you're like, and there's a weird space between the boards and the stands. And you're like, everything just kind of looks like a little bit off to our North American eyes.
Yeah.
But the environment's been great. Like you said, like it sounds and looks great on TV. So, I think as long as you get the passionate fans, it ultimately doesn't really matter exactly what the rink dimensions are or how the stands are laid out.
Yeah.
One last Olympic thought too, before we are, you're going to talk about the rink. I was just going to say, watching that Sweden game, good to see Elias Lindholm back out there. First game, didn't miss any time Olympic wise. And we talked about last episode, Zaka got replaced for injury, so he won't be playing. But Elias Lindholm is.
You know what it is, because like I said, I know that local professional leagues in Europe, like I know the crowds are awesome, like they're very passionate, they're always cheering and singing and stuff. Maybe what I'm thinking of is this the first Olympic on at least in the last 20-30 years on European soil that hasn't been on an Olympic size sheet. Like, you know, like Vancouver, it was an NHL surface. I think Salt Lake City was Olympic size, but Torino, Sochi, maybe it was just bigger ice, so it felt like the stands were further back, and maybe that's why it's kind of making me think that the fans weren't as loud. Maybe the fans were as loud, but the rink was bigger. So the fact that this rink is just kind of like in a bubble. It just feels like the crowd's on top of them. And it's a good atmosphere. It won't be a hockey rink after the Olympics, but for right now, it's a good atmosphere.
And I also think Sochi, you didn't have as many fans traveling in from other countries. Like, you know, traveling to Russia is not always easy for people from the Western world, even for the Olympics. So that was a very Russian centric crowd. Whereas Milan's obviously an easy city for like all of Central Europe to get to. It's a major hub. That's not even for not even far at all.
There was a flight from Boston to Milan that I was looking at that was like $300. That's not too bad. A lot of times you fly to Europe, it's like $600 or more. So it wasn't bad.
I mean, the game right now, like Switzerland is, you know, Switzerland neighbors where they are in Italy right now to the north. And then obviously, you know, France and Italy are close. So exactly. Maybe that's also part of it too. Like these European countries, it's not terrible travel for them to do this.
It'll happen after we're recording, but I would bet for that Czech Canada game, you're going to have a great Czech crowd.
Yes. And fortunately for us, we'll Bridget, you have a dentist appointment, so maybe you can watch it in a chair.
Guys, this is important.
David Pastrnak makes his Olympic debut right when we finish recording this, pretty much against the Canadians, and then US and Latvia later today at 3, I want to say, local time. So, but with that said,
my final Olympic hockey thought, we don't have to go too deep, but the U.S. women absolutely kicked Canada's ass 5-0, and just look like those two have always been close for a long time. It now looks like this U.S. team is like head and shoulders different level than Canada. They dominated them back in November and December in the like the 4-game rivalry series that they played. And, you know, you don't want to take anything for granted, but like the U.S. women should cruise to gold.
Well, and it's comments like that, even though I completely agree with you, that pressure's gonna mount though, right? Like everybody's saying mid tournament that it's their goal to lose essentially. It's like, oh, thanks everyone, appreciate it. Well, now we gotta go win the gold.
We were texting about this because we were all watching it at the same time yesterday. And it was a 5-0 shutout win. Erin Frankel was in net. She played at Northeastern. She's the goalie for the Boston Fleet as well. So she's a lot of local ties for her. And she gets the first ever shutout against Canada for any team, which is kind of crazy. But the goaltending is really good, right? That's an advantage. I think that they between her and Gwen Phillips, they're probably better in net. And then the younger players is what we were talking about in our text. The younger players for the U.S. are better. They have an edge to them. I was trying to tell you guys, like, Abby Murphy plays like Brad Marchand and Tessa Janicki plays like a Kachuk. Like they have an edge to their game. They're not just skilled. They're kind of, you know, there can be a little bit of a pain to deal with. And they're young and they're fast and they're smart and they do all of that stuff and they bother you and they get you off your game. So I do think that the younger women on that team have been a big help so far.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Now the caveat to the U.S.-Canada game, Canada was out their top player. And I don't know what her injury status would be for the medal
round.
She's
not supposed to play the next game either. So Canada's game against Finland, she's not supposed to play in either. Poulin was out against the U.S. and they said it's short term. She was actually not fully ruled out for the Finland game. I think it was listed as like doubtful. Maybe they just hold her out until elimination. But yeah.
So those quarterfinal games must be getting underway any day,
Friday
now, right?
And Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah. But one of those young U.S. stars, by the way, Carolyn Harvey from Salem, New Hampshire. I saw a bunch of the men's players were at that U.S.-Canada game, and Matthew Tkachuk said she's like Bobby Orr out there, which, you know, might not be all that much of an exaggeration, actually. But local connection there. I think she plays at Wisconsin. But I also saw that she took boxing lessons growing up and trained in Lowell with Dickie Eklund, who was the
Oh, wow.
Brother.
Mickey Ward's brother, yeah.
Stepbrother, yeah, of Mickey Ward. Made famous by the movie The Fighter. So, interesting local connection there.
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah.
Best thing that's ever happened to you financially. Go.
Easy. Sold my car on Carvana. Amazing offer.
Really? I hit 200 on the scratcher.
Did the scratcher come to your house and hand you a check?
No.
How many scratchers did you hit to get that? I hit a button on Carvana.com once.
Okay, that's fair.
It's like the lottery, except you always win.
Not like the lottery at all, actually.
Exactly. Inexplicably good. Offers worth bragging about. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Okay. With all that said, we can now get into the mailbag. So thank you all again for submitting them. I guess I'll start off the top here with Chris, who, again, these questions, guys, I don't know if you skimmed through them, but they're all over the place in a good way. And so this will be a fun one. But he starts off, Chris, starts off with a question, says, what are your updated seventh player award nominations? And so maybe we can take it a step further as well and give our leader in the clubhouse right now as well.
Yeah, I think my leader in the clubhouse is Fraser Minton. You know, it kind of just perfectly fits the bill of like player you probably didn't have a lot of expectations for coming into the season, has really established himself as not just a regular, but a like true difference maker and contributor generally as the third line center, but moving up in the lineup recently, obviously with Elias Lindholm and Pavel Zacha missing games. Has played with Pastrnak at times and, you know, fit in pretty well there. You know, two other nominees I would throw out, Murat Husnadinov and Jonathan Aspro. And again, kind of come from the same place of like, didn't really know, in Aspro's case, had zero expectations. Didn't really know what to expect from these guys, but they've really carved out pretty important roles for themselves.
Yeah. And the last time that we did it, those candidates have kind of fallen off, right? It was Alex Steves, Mark Kastelic, and was Fraser Minton the final one?
It was the three that Scott said, but also the two that you had mentioned. It was like those five. But I think to the point you're making, like a couple have pulled away here.
Yeah. Some of them have fallen off. So I don't think Alex Steves is making a push at this point. Fraser Minton obviously gets rookie of the month of January, and he just seems to be getting better. And also, I think there's a few other things that factor in. It's a fan vote. He's likable. So he has been slowly becoming a fan favorite.
Well, we do have to account for Brian stuffing the ballot for Kuzma.
I know. Okay. It's true. He's another fan favorite. So.
You know what? Even I have to, give Fraser his credit here. I think right now it's his award, especially if you're in the Calder conversation, which is a league award. I think you should be the leader in the clubhouse for the Nesson Award.
And I also think that there's probably a preference given to younger players, right? Because it's like, it's just a good story of a guy that nobody knew if he was going to make the team out of camp. Then he does, and then he runs away with it. And I feel like a lot of times seventh player award goes to either somebody who had a down season and then all of a sudden has an impactful season, or is kind of new and is making an impact. And also, like I said, it is a fan vote. And popularity wise, I think if we're being real, like he's extremely popular among the fans right now. So that will factor in.
It will factor in. But like you guys were saying, it's also the production. I mean, I think in addition to what you just said, Bridget, I don't think anybody from a production standpoint has a case over him right now. Again, Jonathan Aspro, you know, I think you mentioned the youth thing, and I think it's fair. It does. There is a marketability to this award, I believe, which is the point you're making. I think Aspro as like a 26-year-old who never played a game this year and then never played a game in the NHL until this year, and it wasn't even opening night. He comes in, and here we are in February at the Olympic break, and he's been playing on your top pair with McAvoy, and for what it's worth, leads the team in plus minus. Like that's he's not the youngest player or the most marketable, but that's like a feel good story. That's like a Disney movie in the making. You know what I mean? It's like, look at this guy who worked his whole life and finally gets a shot at 26. Like that's, but I don't disagree with you guys. Minton's the, he's the, he's the winner right now. If the season,
I also feel like people want to rub it in Toronto's face a little bit more and just like, here's this award that here's this award that shows you made a bad choice.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, thanks for the question, Chris. This is from Joe in Ohio. He says, just wondering about your thoughts on Zaka. Hopefully he's okay. Would not trade a player who plays in all facets of the game. You would just have to turn around and play dearly or pay dearly for a player or players to replace him. Makes no sense. This is probably unpopular to say, but kudos to Don Sweeney. I like everything he has done so far in the last calendar year. Take care, go Bruins. So yeah, I think that kind of stems off our conversation last episode about should he feel a bit vindicated over the last calendar year. He's pressed a lot of right buttons in terms of Zaka. Yeah, I just think, you know, you have him under contract for another year after this, making 4.75. And yes, he's approaching 30, but with the cap going up, I think the player has an opportunity to get a decent raise. Call it what you want. Maybe like $1 million raise, million and a quarter. Like Geeky's making what, 5.7? So like, I don't see him making a ton. Zaka might hit the 6 mark, but which is a nice raise for him, but it's not going to be that bad against the Bruins cap with the percentage wise with the cap going up. So I just think it'll be a good marriage between a player getting a bit of a raise and the team still having him at a good deal. And for all the reasons Joe mentioned, like, yeah, he's a valuable player, and those players like that aren't easily replaceable, right? So like, what's your plan if you trade him? Is your plan to stay competitive? Because it's like, well, he's an important player for them.
Yeah, they're not trading him this season. I think that ship's kind of come and gone. Like his name popped up early in the year, but that was at a time when the Bruins were struggling and you were starting to wonder if the season was already getting away from them. Well, now that there's 4 games between now and the trade deadline and they're in a playoff spot, like they're not going to trade away a piece as significant as Zaka, especially when, like you said, he's under contract for another year. So that's a conversation they can revisit in the summer as to, okay, like, are we extending him? Is he part of our future? Or do we maybe cash in now and not risk, you know, losing him for nothing, you know, in the summer of 27? That can be a conversation for the offseason. In the here and now, I think it's pretty safe to say Pavel Zaka is here through the end of the season.
Yeah, and to part of the comment as well, I was wondering how people were going to react to that little segment we did about, you know, has Don Sweeney been vindicated? Like, have his moves all really worked out recently? Because there's so many people who are entrenched in their negative Don Sweeney views that I thought we were going to get some pushback. But obviously this was kind of adding to the list of things that he's done well, that I guess we didn't really dive into the Zaka part of it too much. But also to Joe's point, trying to replace him, you may end up spending more money, right? And I do think Pavel Zaka, I know he's from the Czech Republic, but he already had an apartment, you know, a living situation in Boston. He liked Boston before even coming here. I don't know how much of a discount you can get on him, but I feel like he isn't the kind of person who is looking for that, like, huge next pay. Like, I think he likes the situation, so maybe that helps you in terms of a contract. So yeah, like there is a chance that you get something worse and you still have to pay just as much or more to replace a second line guy who's been solid and like Joe mentions, plays important power play time. He sometimes kills penalties. Like he does a lot of things well, and he's a good fit, right? Like just personality wise seems to be a good fit. He's liked by his team. There's a lot of things going for him that, you know, a raise that is on par with the salary cap going up, and also just like a little bit more than what he had before, because obviously he's earned a little bit more. I think it's doable. So
is he one of the best forwards in the league? No, but Pavel Zaka is a player that every single team in the league would love to have on their roster, because he's a player that would do a lot of good things all over the game for any team he played for. So like, are the Bruins a contender right now? No, but like if you think the Bruins could be a contender, like a true contender, in a year or two, it's I think he's absolutely a player that you can have in your middle six. I just every contender needs players like Pavel Zacha that just they're just solid players. He's not super flashy. I kind of wish that his shooting percentage was a little bit higher because he has a really good shot. But again, he's not the perfect player. But I think that there are 31 teams outside of Boston, but 32 including Boston that would love to have a player like that on their roster if they could. So I think the Bruins should be among those teams again to try to get an extension in place with him at some point.
To play devil's advocate just for a second. Now, this isn't my opinion, but to play devil's advocate, you could have, you know, you could be of the opinion because this was a rumor that or not even a rumor, but like reporters who were kind of in the know of the fact that teams were kind of poking around about Zacha mentioned that the price was really high, right? Like, it was going to have to blow the Bruins away. It was going to have to be first rounder plus maybe. And so what you could get back, you could argue, you know, if the Bruins feel like they're in that spot, could be worth it. I mean, you want another first round pick that could help, you know, replenish your prospect system, which has already started to happen over the last year. And then you have the first round pick. And then you figure out how to fill the hole, and maybe it's the same price, maybe it's slightly more, but you also have this first round pick. So like, I can see why people like I could see that side of it, but I personally think that they're better off keeping him, and they don't have to make that decision this year. Obviously, he's got one more year after this on his contract, and hope if they want to extend him, I think they should do it sooner than later. But yeah, they don't have to make that decision yet.
Yeah, well, and also just for the record, like, if people don't know, they can't negotiate an extension until July 1st anyway. So like we're still well away from the time frame where like they even could do that if that's what they want to do.
And also those same people, Bridget, would probably mention you also have James Higgins on the way. Will Zellers is a really promising prospect. Look what Dina Turner is doing. So you could also say, well, you can get something for Zach and you have these younger kids that can replace him in due time. It's like, well, theoretically, like that's not – That could be true, but you know you still need guys who are like veterans that are in their prime to play alongside these young kids as they enter the league. Like it's not, you know, it's anyway. Okay,
yeah, like you're extending the timeline, right? Like if it's the more you trade away good NHL players and say, well, we're just gonna throw kids in there and like let them grow, well. Okay, but like then you're extending the timeline of like when you're actually going to be good again, right? Because it's going to take time for those young kids to grow. James Higgins and Will Zellers aren't going to walk in on day one and be impact top six forwards. Like it's going to take a little bit of time. They're going to have to learn a lot at the NHL level. So, you know, then that gets into the discussion of like, well, are you taking advantage of the prime years of David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy, or have you now pushed your window beyond that, and now like you have to start to think about trading those guys away,
right? And it's February 2026 right now. I mean, realistically, Will Zeller's first full season in the NHL, if all goes well, will probably be the 27-28 season, right? He's going to play his sophomore year, and then maybe he goes pro this time next year towards the end of the year, but it's going to be that next fall where he's like so, and all the while, and we've talked about this before, but again, David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy, they're approaching 30. I know that's crazy to say, but it's true. So is Pavel Zacha. Lindholm, both Lindholms are in their 30s. Zadorov is 30. Geeky's 27. Swayman's 27. Like you, by the time all these players come along, it's like not that your early 30s means that they're hanging up their skates. That's still prime years for guys, but I'm just saying you just be careful what you wish for because these guys aren't – they're not all spring chickens like you may think. Some like they're in their primes, and 3-4 seasons goes by, and now don't look now, but they're in their mid 30s. So it just shit happens fast. All right, this is from Sam. Like this question, it's interesting. Do you expect Monty to still be the head coach of the Blues next season? It sounds like this season has been a disaster with many of the same issues that plagued him here in Boston, like constant line changes. I know he has 3 or 4 more seasons left, but wondering if they might think it's time to reset, especially with a new GM coming in. asking because it sounds like the Bruins are considering going after Robert Thomas to be their 1C. We'll put a pin in that. Get you guys' thoughts on that. That's obviously been speculated, but I don't think it's been anything more than just fan speculation. However, the price seems excessively steep. They would need to offer both first-round picks, Lauri Patra, maybe another player. As a former coach of the Bruins, would Monty offer up insights as to what players he would want if this deal were to happen? We'll stop it there, guys. So do you think Monty will be fired? And if he's not, and the Bruins are interested in Robert Thomas, you know, would he be would he have any consultation for the Blues management?
Yeah, I mean, if they're looking at the Bruins and they're looking at certain players, like, yeah, I'm sure Doug Armstrong would talk to Jim Montgomery about, like, hey, what did you think of this guy when you were in Boston? Doesn't mean, you know, Montgomery would not have any sort of final say. Like, that's ultimately the GM's call, especially because as Sam alludes to, like, Monty might not be in St. Louis all that much longer if things don't turn around. My feeling with Montgomery is like the fact that he's already survived this long makes me think he probably gets through the end of the season and then they kind of reassess in the off season, you know, whether he's going to get another year or not. It is just amazing though. Like, you hear a lot of the same things about how that team just doesn't seem to have any structure or identity or find any way to play consistently on a night to night basis. And it's like, yeah, like that's exactly what happened for the first month and a half of the season here last year before he got fired. Is like Bruins didn't have consistency, didn't have structure, didn't have an identity. Like, there was no clear way that they wanted to or could play on a night to night basis. So, it's fascinating. And as far as Robert Thomas goes, yeah, Sam's right. Like, you probably have to give up an awful lot. I don't know if it's all those pieces she lists, but like, it's probably three of them, you know, out of like two first round picks, Lauri, Patra. Like, yeah, you probably start with like about three of those, and that's probably the core of the package.
Queen Carvania stood haloed by the morning sun. An army hung on her every word.
My champions, I have sold my chariot on Carvana. 'Twas a lovely SUV, an inexplicably queenly offer. They're even coming to the castle to collect it. Tonight, we feast.
An offer you can feast on. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot to give up, I guess. To the Monty point, it's crazy how he was the head coach of a team that won the most games in the NHL in an NHL regular season not that long ago, a few seasons ago, and now his team has 20 wins in 56 games and or 57 games, and they're second to last in the entire league. Obviously different teams, and the way that Bruins team was built kind of ran itself. And that was almost a criticism once Bergeron and Krejci were gone. And once the pieces were different, it didn't flow the same way, and the question became, was it really the players that were kind of driving the bus? And you know, what was Monty's role? And, the line changes in that playoff series were, and you know, the decisions on where to play Bertuzzi and different things like, and how to rotate the goalies, all those things were questioned in terms of coaching decisions. Though throughout that season, not much was questioned because they were just rolling. So totally different situation than he had that year. I hate to say this, I think he should get fired, right? Like, I feel like he's done it. Like, it's not working. Do you think next year is going to be any different for them? Like, I don't, that's the thing is, like, maybe he's just not a fit there. And it feels like maybe we've already seen enough to know that. He has survived, as to Scott's point, past that point of questioning it. So maybe he stays.
Well, and I will say, like, there's one big problem that team has that I don't really think he has a whole lot of control over, and that's the fact that Jordan Binnington has been the worst goalie in the NHL this season.
Well, and like, how is Swayman last year too?
Right, struggled out of the gate. Yeah, so you know, Jack Parker used to say they should have called this game goalie, and like there's truth to that. It's like, yeah, like he's getting league worst goaltending this year, the year that the Bruins had the best record ever, they got historically great goaltending. And then even the next year when they overachieved, you had Allmark and Swayman playing really well. So like, yeah, I mean, a lot of coaches, like their success comes down to, in a lot of cases, a big part of the pie is how is your goalie playing? And he's getting awful goaltending this year.
Well, he's on Team Canada still. So
yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting because if you actually think about Monty's tenure in Boston, he really only struggled as a coach for, you know, a month and a half, and it got him fired. I mean, the centennial season, he won to Jack Adams. Or, I'm sorry, the 22-23 season, he won to Jack Adams. The centennial season, I honestly think, was his better coaching performance because I thought he made a lot with a lot less of a roster. And then we all know how last year went for the Bruins, and I'll tell you this. I think Jim Montgomery, I don't think he was the biggest problem. I just don't think he was part of the solution. I think he had as much egg on his face as everybody else involved, but that team didn't flounder simply because of Monty. Like especially in those first month and a half, there was a lot of things and a lot of individuals who needed to be better and do better both on and off the ice. So and then he goes to St. Louis and he turns that team season around. And they go on a huge run and make the playoffs. They were the best team in the second half. So I don't think Jim Montgomery is a bad coach. I think that, you know, I don't think circumstances in Boston to start last year were great. His situation included being a lame duck coach. And then I think that right now in St. Louis, I don't think their team's that good. And to Scott's point, like they're getting shit goaltending. So does that mean I think Monty is, you know, an amazing coach? Like I think he's a smart guy, and I don't know, he might have problems like running a room throughout the course of his season. I don't know if his personality is best for a head coach. Maybe his personality is better suited for an assistant coach. And it's not because he's only trying to be their friends. We saw him, you know, literally pushing Brad Marchand and screaming at him on the bench at times last year in front of cameras and teammates. We saw him bench David Pastrnak. So he tried to push buttons in Boston. I don't know if it's Monty or if it's the situations that he's in or if it's a little bit of both. It's probably a little bit of everything. But I don't know if I'm Armstrong, I'm St. Louis. I don't know. I think, yeah, you definitely just give it the rest of the season probably. And after that, they have to ask themselves some hard questions about their organization as a whole. The other great thing out there, Scott, in addition to they should call the game goalie, is coaches coach, players play. The players, at the end of the day, no matter how good or bad your coaching is, it's like they're the impact. They're the ones out there. So is the roster good enough? That's what Doug Armstrong should be asking, because I think Jim Montgomery is capable of coaching some solid NHL hockey. But I guess we'll see how it plays out. Okay, moving along to Kim. Do you think Philip Roenick with the Canucks or Brendan Schneider with the Rangers are right-handed defenseman targets for the Bruins at the deadline? If so, do you think Lauri, Patra, and possibly a pick could get either done? Who else would be a possible target for them as a right-handed defenseman? So, Bridget Scott, if you guys want to take this question in terms of the trade deadline, and then if you want to extend it to the offseason, you can also do that if the deadline is not a timeline you think is realistic. But how do you guys feel about that question?
Yeah, so Philip Roenick has his name has popped up, so it's fair to ask, but he's got 7 years left on his contract. He signed through 2032. He has a full no trade, and he has said he does not want to go anywhere. For whatever reason, he seems to be happy in Vancouver, even though that team and organization is
the one person that's happy there.
I mean, listen, it's a really nice city. Like, maybe he just likes living there.
He's got a nice house on a lake or something. Yeah. Great view. Yeah, Prime real estate.
Maybe he likes, maybe he's a skier and he likes being close to Whistler. I don't know. you know, so unless something changes there, like, he's not available unless he wants to be available. I do think it would be worth considering and worth targeting if he is available, because I like Philip Roenick as a player. You know, he's playing like number one minutes there now with Quinn Hughes gone. That's probably asking too much of him. I think if you slot him in on your second pair behind Charlie McAvoy, that looks really good. Braden Schneider, yeah, different case. Obviously a younger player, 24, is going to be a restricted free agent after the season. Rangers are already selling, so certainly seems like he could be available, but I think it would take a lot to get him because I do think the Rangers like him and see him as part of their future. But like he hasn't like fully hit yet as an NHLer. You know, there's been times he looks really good and like you see the traits. He's 6'4". You know, he is regarded as kind of more of a shutdown guy versus an offensive guy. Like, he doesn't really bring a whole lot offensively. So like the tools are there, but he probably hasn't put it all together just yet. Another case of maybe being thrown into more minutes than he really should be handling at the moment. But yeah, my gut would tell me that the Rangers find a way to keep him, get something worked out over the summer as an RFA, even if it's a shorter term bridge deal. But yeah, also definitely a player I would be taking a look at if I'm the Bruins, if he actually is available. And then I have some other names, but I'll let you guys weigh in on those two first.
Well, I'll see. I think that at this point, if there's someone on the Rangers, you're calling because they have made it obvious that they are selling. So no harm in asking about somebody that, who knows, maybe the Rangers think they actually value a pick or one of those prospects like Laura, or, you know, they value what they could get back more than what they think they can get out of Schneider. So it's always worth a call if it's with the Rangers, because they are selling. But the Roenick thing, it comes down to he's in control. And if he doesn't want to come here, then that just takes it off the table, which you could offer the Sun and it wouldn't happen. So yeah, that obviously complicates that situation.
Yeah, I think
he is on the Czech national team. So
he is.
Yeah.
He's going to have some tough assignments today against the Canadians. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you guys handled that pretty well. Scott, what were the other names that you wanted to mention?
So one name that I'd say the Bruins have been linked to more in rumors than maybe like hard, you know, real reporting, but Connor Murphy from the Blackhawks, who's a player I like and like a good physical shutdown type of D-man, but is just the sort of player I don't really think the Bruins should be targeting right now. He's 32 and he would be a rental. He's an unrestricted free agent after the season. The same way we talk about, hey, Andrew Peak might get you something because there aren't a lot of right-handed defensemen available. Well, the same goes for Connor Murphy. You know, like if Chicago moves him, they're going to get real assets. And I just don't think the Bruins should really be the kind of team giving that up. We mentioned St. Louis, Justin Faulk, another name that's been out there. Again, I feel the same way as Murphy. Like, he's in his early 30s and he's a pending unrestricted free agent. I don't think the Bruins should be doing those kind of moves. Couple of right shot defensemen with a year left after this. One is Brandon Carlo, whose name is on the trade block. Like, listen, I don't think the Bruins are doing that, but like
Fraser, can we get Fraser Mitten back? We'll let you keep the pick.
By the way, Carlo has not been good for the Maple
No,
Leafs.
He hasn't.
I said this about him last year, but the league is passing him by. He's not a good enough skater. He relies on his size and reach, and he's not physical. And it's why Toronto thought that they were getting something with him because of his size and reach and whatnot. And defensive, he's not the defensive defenseman that people think he is. He's okay. He's not that good. Not anymore.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't go back to that well, but just in the sake of, like, again, throwing out the options, like, he could be one. And then the other would be Rasmus Ristolainen in Philly. Also has a year left after this. Is a player that at one point I thought was extremely overrated and overpaid, but has actually kind of revived his career quite nicely in Philly and again, is physical, is more of that stay at home, shut down type of player. $5.1 million, which, again, a couple years ago, I would have said, like, that's way too much for Ristolainen. Now, I might feel like it's still a little bit too much, but that, like, that's not an insane price for what he's kind of settled into.
He's 31, too, just upon checking, which is, you know, still some good years there.
I mean, the first two guys you mentioned, Scott, I'm not giving up any assets for either of those guys as a rental. In fact, with them approaching free agency, I'd rather just, you know, take my chances on them hitting the market and then maybe see if they're still there. If not, then whatever. Like, the organization's not hinging upon Connor Murphy or Justin Falk. Carlo, absolutely not. Seeing that song and dance, I'm good. Ristolainen, yeah, I like what he brings. You know, I'm not really interested in giving up anything for him. Again, he's another guy. If he goes to market, but now you're talking, now he's going to be what, 33 or 30 at that point, something like that. So I don't know. I mean, what the Bruins should be doing is make sure you hit in the draft. Like, identify the right side of your blue line in the draft and make sure that you draft somebody who can play on the roster in a top four role in the next couple of years. In the meantime, like, you know, maybe you can find some sort of short-term solution that's not going to break the bank or being a long-term commitment, but can get the job done. Like that, the long-term solution on the right side of the blue line should be somebody that the Bruins are drafting this coming June. That should be the long-term solution. Until then, if you can sign a guy for cheap or whatever, or just for like a year or two until that prospect is ready, then yes, you have to conduct business still. But that's what I think, that's the best case scenario for the Bruins. They draft somebody this year. Ideally this year. Maybe it's somebody they've already drafted, but you know what? On the right side of the blue line, they haven't drafted anybody. So hopefully it's somebody this year that they draft that will be on that blue line, call it in 2 years' time, if it's a top 15 pick.
Evening, buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Yeah.
So... I'm not trying to sound like an asshole with Carlo. I've seen the song and dance too many times. I've seen highlights of him this year with Toronto where he falls on a pivot backwards and gives the guy a breakaway. And he's constantly getting out-muscled in the front of the net on the PK. I'm all set with Carlo. Like, good guy. Like, he's a good guy off the ice. And I really liked him for a lot of his career in Boston. I'm all set with the player he's been the last couple of years and going forward.
Is there any situation where the Bruins don't have to give up much to get him back that you're fine with it?
I don't like how he plays. I don't like his style of play. I think the league's passed him by. No, I'm all set. Like, now if they bring him back, am I going to go get his jersey? Absolutely. But no, I'm just kidding. No, I don't like the way he plays anymore. I don't think he's as effective as I'm just all set. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm all set though. I hope. Let him be somebody else's.
Is he better than Jokke Haarju? Yes. I mean, yes, he is.
It doesn't mean I want him. Like, I'm not. You're asking me, like, do I like broccoli or asparagus? I'd rather. I don't really. Give me some French fries. I want either one.
French fries. Is that what you said?
Give me some steak fries.
Okay.
Yeah. Like
you really are hungry.
Well, but also Jokke Haarju, I think he's like Jokke Haarju is their 7th D right now. Like the better question is I'd rather Aspro than Carlo. That's the real question. Yeah. Now I know he's playing the left side with McAvoy and he's a lefty, but like Jokke Haarju when they're healthy, he's their 7th D. So I don't think I would take Carlo over anybody in Boston's top 6 right now if we're talking McAvoy, Aspro, Zadorov, Hampus Lindholm, Lauri. Maybe I would take him over Peak, but that's close. But that's close. I think they're kind of similar, honestly. All right. East Bay Brian. Now, this question from Brian, I got to off the top here. Love this question. It's got some spice. He comes with receipts. and I appreciate that. East Bay Brian says, it was kind of funny how misty you guys were all getting about trading Victor Arvidsson. Sure, January was great, and he's outperformed what you all expected from him going into the season, in parentheses, which honestly was straight up insulting to a guy with 200 NHL goals. All right, fair enough, fair enough.
But how many of those goals did he score last year?
or I guess how many of those goals have been scored prior to the last two or three seasons? But hey, listen, his point's there. But he's not figuring into any long-term plans, and there's plenty of depth, a bit more than the multiple fourth liners that you guys characterized as before the season. To replace him for the stretch run, plus the possibility of a storybook debut for Higgins, RV should yield at least a second rounder in 27, and Sweeney should leap at it. Bridget Scott.
So I will say, first off, in my defense on Victor Arvidsson, I believe I was very clear that I always liked him prior to these injury troubles the last couple of years. Like, he was always a player I liked watching in Nashville in particular. And I think you're seeing some of that old Arvidsson returning this year. And like, you know, it can be a positive or a negative, but like the pure chaos of his game at times, like, I legitimately always enjoyed watching that. So, yeah, look, I'm glad he's bounced back, but the last couple of years have been tough. As far as trading him away, like, yeah, I get the case for it. And I get that, like, you probably can get a pretty good asset for him. I just think it would be a much more significant blow to this roster than we thought going into the year. Like, he has played well. He is third on the team in 5-on-5 scoring. Like, he's been an important player. He's a key part of what's been a very good second line. You can say, yeah, I think, you know, you can plug in James Higgins after BC season ends, or, you know, Husnadinov can play there, or whatever you think the solution is. But the fact is like, Arvidsson's been in that role and he's done it. And yes, there have still been a couple injuries this year, but I would just be careful about just assuming that, like, any young player you can plug in there and it's going to be the same. Like, that's just not a guarantee. And I'll also point out that Marco Sturm loves Victor Arvidsson. And when he has talked about that second line, he's singled out Arvidsson as the one who makes it go. He said, like, Arvidsson raises the energy level for Zacha and Mittelstadt. So I also think, like, you're going to, if you take him away, trade him away, you're also risking kind of like upsetting your coach, your first year coach, who's going to be like, what the hell? Like, I thought we were doing a pretty good job here and we're pushing for the playoffs, and you just traded away the guy that I view as like the engine of our second line. Like, I just don't think the Bruins are doing it. I just don't think they're trading him away. Again, unless someone really wants to come in and like blow them away with a, you know, it wouldn't even be a middle of the first round pick. It would be a late round pick, right? Cause it would be a contender calling. So I don't even know what the package would look like, but I get the case. I just don't think it's happening.
If you pick your direction and your direction is that this year we're going to try to make the playoffs and we know that our direction is heading up, right? Whether it not necessarily be this year that we're a contender, but we're playoffs and then contender, you know, it's about building at that point, and giving the team a little bit of confidence that, if you're Don Sweeney, you know, a nod of approval of what has been done. And a lot of times guys talk about, like, Morgan Geeky said this early in the season when they were struggling. It's like, we know we need to do better because we know how much it hurt last year when all the guys that we were friends with left, right? Like, and that's our fault. We didn't play well enough to keep the team together, because everybody had to get traded away. And it is a moral blow to get rid of guys. And maybe he isn't in their long-term plans, but, you know, for this season, if you're choosing that you're not selling, you're probably keeping him. You're choosing that you're going to be a team that tries to make the playoffs and maybe does make the playoffs because they're in a spot right now, you're keeping him. When he says getting misty, does he mean like we were going to cry?
I think so.
I was crying, so I'll
okay. All right.
Yeah, I think I'll stand with what I've said before. If somebody offers you a first round pick, I'm doing it all day, every day. I don't care what it does to the room. Sorry, guys, he's not going to be here in 3 months anyway. If it's a third round pick, I'm all set. The option, ironically, which is what East Bay Brian presented to us, is a second round pick. It's not me. I want to. You guys stare myself in the mirror and call myself Misty? No, I'm a lot.
To throw us off the scent.
No. Is that if I was going to ask, if it was me, you'd be about Husnadinov. That's for damn sure. It's a second round pick. That's the one that I've always kind of been seesawing with. I'm like, would I trade him for a second for an expiring asset? Maybe. But again, to the point Scott made earlier, it's okay. It's probably going to be a contender. So you're talking about a contender's second round pick. So, you know, where's that? Somewhere in the, you know, 50s, like, or low 60s, even, like, so it's, that's not bad. I mean, that's still a decent pick, can be a decent pick still. I guess, like, here's my question to you guys, and I'm going to kind of piggyback off of Brian's, but it's like, if you don't think that, I'm going to piggyback off my own question here. If you don't think that
Brian-ception.
If you don't think he's going to, like, you don't think the Bruins are re-signing him in the offseason, do you?
I don't know.
That's where I was going.
I lean no, but I don't think that's set in stone. Like, I think there'll be conversations.
Yeah. I mean, well, your answer, Scott, was kind of, that's why I was asking the question, because when you talk about how you think Marco Sturm loves him, it's like, okay, well, if the head coach loves him, and he thinks he's the engine of a second line, you're describing the characteristics of a player that a team would want to assign. But it kind of seems like a foregone conclusion that they won't, for the obvious. So, you know, I don't know. I don't want to mess with the room for a third round pick. I think I definitely would for a first. I'm sorry. It's a business. Like, I do think that there's somebody, I absolutely think that you could plug in, you know, a Husnadinov or, you know, somebody like that on that line. And then, okay, so Mikey Isimont is now a full-time player, you know, or hell, even maybe Alex Steves, like, in that situation, like, could play that role. So I do think, like, you could trade Arvidsson, and I don't think the net effect would be, like, okay, Husnadinov, I think, does a lot of similarities to Arvidsson in terms of, like, the chaotic nature he presents to defenders in the forecheck. Alex Steves, not so much. So it depends if you're trying to replace Arvidsson, if you trade him with a player that kind of plays similar to his style, then yeah, I think Husnadinov, has he done it as much as Arvidsson in his career? No. But his age and upside, I would do that for a couple of months in a year where you're not going to win the cup anyway. So again, I do think that there's some trepidation about messing with the room. It's like, but I don't know if we overplay that too much on this podcast, but given the situation the Bruins are in and Arvidsson's age and his long-term fit in Boston, and if you can get a first rounder for him, I would trade him. I wouldn't do it for a third. A second, to East Bay's point, I would have to think about that, truly. And it's because I don't think that the net effect between Arvidsson and Husnadinov is much of a drop-off at all. And then, like, you know, Steves or Isimont or whatever is your fourth liner full time, like, I don't know, whatever. And that's not even talking about O'Hagan's. Anyway, I think we probably spent a little much time on this question at this point, but
can I? I've been wondering this, and this might be a dumb question, but is East Bay Rhode Island? Is that a Rhode Island thing?
I don't know. Actually, for some reason I was thinking it was like some part in, like, Nova Scotia. I don't know where East Bay is. I don't know why I was thinking Nova Scotia. It just sounds like someone that would be in Nova Scotia. East Bay, Nova Scotia.
I mean, I know, like, it's definitely a thing, like, in San Francisco, like, in the Bay Area, like, there's an East Bay, like, you know, Oakland and that side of it. But I assume this, Brian, is closer to us. Maybe not.
I'm seeing Barrington, Rhode Island, East Bay Pickleball Club, Warren, Rhode Island. This is a quick Google search. I don't know. East Bay, where are you from? East Bay is too generic of a search. Where's East Bay?
Yeah.
I think that's a Rhode Island. Bridget, you should know better.
Yeah, my grandpa worked in Barrington. My grandpa worked in Barrington for years, and I've never heard of East Bay. I used to be there all the time, but yeah.
It very well may be East Bay, Rhode Island. I'm just going to say, I think East Bay, Nova Scotia sounds really pretty.
Okay.
that sounds cool, doesn't it? That could be a really good junior team. The East Bay, you know, I don't know, fishermen, whatever. All right, let's move along here.
Best thing that's ever happened to you financially. Go.
Easy. Sold my car on Carvana. Amazing offer.
Really? I hit 200 on a scratcher.
Did the scratcher come to your house and hand you a check?
No.
How many scratchers did you hit to get that? I hit a button on Carvana.com once.
Okay, that's fair.
It's like the lottery, except you always win.
Not like the lottery at all, actually.
Exactly. Inexplicably good. Offers worth bragging about. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Let's go to West Bay Rod. No, I'm just kidding. Let's go to Roger here. Roger says, there's been so much talk all season about prospects, James Higgins, Dean Letourneau, Bridget. This is probably going to go towards you, so get your antenna ready. There's been so much talk all season about prospects, James Higgins and Dean Letourneau. Can you spend a little time now talking about whether Andre Gasseau at BC is a bona fide NHL prospect, and also a little time on the Bruins prospects playing for Quinnipiac and Cornell? Do any of those players project to be future NHL players?
So I can speak to Gasseau first, and that was also who he asked about first. He's at over a point per game pace right now. He did have an injury this season, required surgery, got it done. It ended up being shorter term. Like, the recovery really wasn't that long. And he's been awesome since he came back. He's big, right? Like, he's 6'4", he's a center. He's mature, he's a smart player. In terms of him being, you know, a prospect, I think he's a seventh rounder, right? Picked 213th overall in 2021 by Boston. He, in that regard, a lot of times you think of a seventh round pick and you're like, I don't know if that's going to pan out. He's having a great season at BC. I've been impressed watching him. That being said, it's up to him. Can he continue doing that once he gets out of college? You know, does he join the Providence? It's not going to be a jump like Higgins, where we think he's going to go right from college and then, oh, all of a sudden he's playing in Boston. Like, no, it's going to be you go to Providence, you work your butt off in Providence. And if he can do what he's been doing in college, then maybe. I wouldn't count him out as a guy that could make the pros just based off the season that he's having and some of the growth I've seen from him. And just talking to him, he seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders. He's figured it out in that way. Scott, I don't know if you have an opinion on Andre Gasseau. I thought he could have been, and maybe if I had voted, would have probably been who I voted for the Beanpot MVP. He had his marks all over that tournament. So yeah.
Yeah. I think he has a shot to play NHL games. Like Bridget said, I think it's probably going to take time and in Providence first. The other thing to point out here is, if he wanted to, he could wait till August and become a free agent and sign with any team. So if for some reason he thought, you know, maybe he's not going to get enough of a shot with the Bruins, he could potentially just wait and see what else is out there for him. You know, he's a senior, he's a captain. He plays in all situations for BC. You know, you ask Greg Brown about him, and like, he speaks very glowingly about what Andre Gasseau means to that team on and off the ice. But yeah, I mean, his size, his work ethic gives him a shot. He probably, you know, I'd say probably still needs to improve his skating. Like, that has kind of been the knock on him for a while, and probably remains the knock on him. But yeah, I mean, I think anytime you see a 6'4 center who can do a little bit of everything, it's like, yeah, absolutely, that player has a shot at being an NHLer, whether he ultimately gets there or not.
Yeah. And he's only played 13 games this season, so the sample size is smaller because of the injury that I mentioned. But I've liked how he's played with Higgins too. Like, Higgins has been a wing on that line. Higgins has been on the left side, Gasseau's centering it, Hemming on the right in the second half once they brought him in. The line looks good, and those two work well together. So I'll just add that.
Yeah, and then, like, along the line of, like, a center with size who I think has a chance to play in the NHL. I mean, Roger asked about the guys at Quinnipiac. Chris Pelosi is 6'2". I remember the first development camp when he came to Boston. He was like scrawny as hell, and you were like, oh, that kid's gonna put on like a lot of muscle. And to his credit, he has. And like now he's like a legitimate power forward type of player for Quinnipiac, who's a top 10 team in the country. He plays pretty big minutes up in the lineup. He's one of their leading goal scorers. Really good net front presence. So that's another guy that I look at and I'm like, yeah, he's gonna have a shot. Like, you know, there's still some development to go, but there's enough traits there that you like. And he's the kind of player that, like, again, could at least fit into a bottom six or a fourth line role. So Pelosi's another one that I definitely would give a chance at him being an NHLer at some point.
And to just go through the college guys this season that are over a point per game pace, Higgins is 1.3 points per game pace. Gasso right under him, 1.15. And then Letourneau over a point per game. Pelosi over a point per game. And then Ryan Walsh with Cornell just under. He's at 0.95 points per game. So he's just right around hovering that point per game pace as well at Cornell. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on him or any of the other guys that I just said.
Well, my thought on Ryan Walsh is, like, again, he's a first-line center playing big minutes in every situation on a winning team. Cornell also top 10 in the country in NPI. Like, you know, whether these skill sets ultimately translate to the NHL, like, you like the fact that you have these prospects playing big roles on winning teams. Like, that's encouraging. There's something to be said for, like, learning how to win and learning how to kind of do everything for a team like that. So, you know, Ryan Walsh doesn't have the size that Pelosi and Gasso have. He maybe has, you know, he's maybe a little bit more of a playmaker, kind of creative mind out there. But, you know, he put up a lot of points in the USHL. Cornell usually plays like a little bit more of a defensive style, so they're not as wide open, high scoring type of team. You know, so I don't know if Ryan Walsh is a future NHLer, but I like the role that he's in at Cornell and the way that he's playing there.
All right, guys, let's go to two quick questions to finish off here.
Just quickly, yeah. One last, I wanted to mention the other Quinnipiac Bruins prospect, which is Elliot Groenewald on defense. Now, admittedly, I haven't watched a ton of Quinnipiac. I did see them when they came up to BC and kicked BC's ass. Elliot Groenewald has the best plus minus in the country. He's a plus 37 in 30 games. And plays over 20 minutes a game. Like, I know plus minus is flawed, but like there's something there, right? Like, you don't lead the country in plus minus by accident. So he's just like, he's a sturdy defender, just good, smart player. Has a little bit of offense in his game, so. Again, another guy that, like, is going to take a little more time, but there's encouraging things there as well.
Okay, let's do one more question for this episode. Now, if you haven't heard the question that you submitted, I promise you that we will get to all of these certainly throughout the next couple of episodes, because we have nothing but time, Bridget and Scott, for mailbags while the NHL is on Olympic break. So let's just do one more here from Jimmy on YouTube. This is more back to an Olympic question because it's kind of the soup du jour right now. But he said, you didn't pick your bronze favorites, Finns. So the Finns definitely would have been, and they still are, very capable of medaling. I didn't love their game against Slovakia. Maybe I'm a little down on them after that. For me, I think the Finns or the Swedes, I think, is still the safe bet to win bronze. But again, if you think it's going to be a Canada US gold medal and you know, Sweden Finland bronze medal game, like, that's what I think is going to happen. It's probably not going to happen. Somebody's going to mess up the bracket somehow, some way.
I don't know, France.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if the US is you know, the U.S. or Canada gets upset in the semis. I don't know if they play each other in the semis, but it seems too good to be true. We're going to have a Canada-U.S. gold medal game, Finland-Sweden bronze. But I'm sure some teams will have something to say about that. But what do you guys have for your picks?
Yeah, I would say Sweden would be my pick for bronze. But I would absolutely throw the Czechs in there as a team that could be in that bronze medal game. Like, I don't at all rule out, like, David Pastrnak just going nuts in this tournament and Lukas Dostal stealing games in net. Like, that alone is a formula that could get them into the medal round. So,
especially
with Finland already slipping up. So, yeah, you're right. Like, Natchez also a star player.
Yeah, and obviously we did four nations last year, but it seems like the next iteration will be six, and the six best teams would certainly include the Czech Republic. And so, yeah, I like that team. And we'll, I'm sure, in Boston be watching it closely because of David Pastrnak. But I guess...
Bridget's picking Mexico to win the bronze.
Yeah. I get to be honest, though, I think Sweden is who I would pick. But if you're going to make me. and by the way, Switzerland beat France 4-0. So they're just getting warmed up.
Yeah. They have to win gold the hard way.
It's a long tournament. They got, you know, at least two games left.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about the Finns, too, is that I just didn't really like their game much at all. Again, I know they outshot Slovakia like 58 to 19 or 20. I get that, but I felt like they were being too cute. They were, I don't know. They had a lot of great A's that they passed up on. And I think that there's probably a combination of nerves, combination of you're all countrymen, but you know, outside of four nations face off, these guys haven't all played together. These NHL players haven't really played together on the international stage, so there's some chemistry that they're trying to gain. For example, Mikko Rantanen should dominate pretty much any Olympic game that he's in outside of a game against, you know, maybe the Swedes, Russia if they're in it, the Swedes, Canada, or the U.S. But he just seemed like a guy out there. He didn't really impose his will, and his ice time reflected it too. You know, Miro Heiskanen, he's one of the best defensemen in the NHL. Didn't really notice him out there. So again, it's game one. They're going to rev up here. But the Finns also didn't have a great showing in the four nations. Now, granted, they were without Heiskanen in there, but they had Barkov. And again, Barkov's a huge miss for them. We've talked about that. So I don't know. I mean, they obviously, nobody gets eliminated after the round robin. And if they beat Sweden, then, you know, the group could still be up to the Finns, because now, you know, Sweden will have a loss. The Finns would have had a loss. And so I guess we'll see how it goes. I need to see more from Finland before I feel like they're going to be a bronze medal winner here. At least.
I thought Sebastian Aho had a tough game. He gets just knocked down on, I think that was the third goal. You know, yeah. It's his guy in front just wins a positional battle and bangs home the loose puck. So,
yeah.
We'll see how they rebound.
Joki Haru too. I said it online, but the first goal for Slovakia, it wasn't him who turned the puck over. It was his teammate, but they turned the puck over to Slavkovsky, and so Joki Haru just let Slavkovsky walk right to the net because he was trying to take away the backdoor pass. And we've seen that from Joki Haru this year for Boston. I mean, the game against Vegas comes to my mind earlier in the year, where, like, as you do want to give, in a two-on-one situation or whatever, like as a defenseman, you do want to allow your goaltender to take the shot and you take the pass away to make the decision-making easier for, you know, everybody involved. But at a certain point, like you can't just let the guy go all the way in. Like you have to give a little bit of deception and make it a little bit harder than that. Anyway. Okay. Bridget, we know you have to get your teeth shined and nice and clean, so we'll let you go. Thank you all very much for listening. Continue to send questions. Scott, any final thoughts from you?
One thing. So I'll be on WEI this Sunday morning with Justin Turpin and Tom Carroll. So a little bit of a WEI.com show. I think we're going like every Sunday for the foreseeable future. So unfortunately, Sunday skate, not back this season. Obviously, things kind of changed a bit when WEI added the Morning Brew show with Razor and Jaffe on Saturdays. But so I will be on. I will make sure Bruins get discussed and we do hockey talk and Olympics. And then also, if people want to check it out, Paul Bissonnette, Biz Nasty, was on with Jones and Keefe on Wednesday. If people want to go listen to that.
So you'll be wearing the Stadium Series jersey that Bridget had made up for you, right? Make sure you wear that.
I'm still waiting for it to deliver it.
Okay. Okay.
We're having some issues. It's been hard to find somebody who took it seriously. So
I mean, production costs, tariffs, you know.
Oh, no. I will spare no expense. Don't worry about that.
Okay, so as I said a few minutes ago, we're going to continue to do mailbags. If we didn't get to your question today, we will in ensuing episodes. Please submit your comments on YouTube, email skatepod@weei.com. You can tweet at Scott, Bridget, myself, or the show account online as well. I think that's pretty much it, unless you want to hand deliver a letter to one of us, in which case we'll love to say hi. Maybe bring a Chick-fil-A platter of nuggets. I'm a sucker for those.
I'm starving, you guys. I don't know if I have time to eat either, so it's gonna be fun.
And for mine and Scott's eyes, if you guys have your top 10 roast beef rankings, North Shore beef rankings, put them in the comments too.
Oh, I got some thoughts on this,
guys.
All right, thank you all very much for listening. Enjoy the Olympics, and we'll talk to you next week.
Queen Carvania stood haloed by the morning sun. An army hung on her every word.
My champions, I have sold my chariot on Carvana. 'Twas a lovely SUV, an inexplicably queenly offer. They're even coming to the castle to collect it. Tonight, we feast.
An offer you can feast on. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.